Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the web, Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures in wrestling, entertainment, and general pop culture. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Primrose, Popinjay, you're too late. The Fantastic Four are dead, and you are in time for your own demise.
you all out there in the American wasteland. It is that devil you know, the maniacal minister of the occult, Reverend Dan Wilson, here for another exciting edition of the Midnight Black Mass here on Blog Talk Radio, courtesy of GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. You just heard the legendary Danzig with the classic track Long Way Back from Hell off of Danzig 2, Lucifuge. You ought to own it if you don't. Go buy it now at iTunes, Amazon, or even the official Danzig site. I'm sure old Glenn would be more than happy to accept your money in exchange for a copy of that great album if it's not already in your collection. Long Way Back from Hell leads into, of course, it has been a long way back from hell for the Rev this week. Hardcore Hell, that is. Hardcore Hell 2012 emanated from the NWA Arena in Cornelia, Georgia last Saturday night, and the sparks were a-flying. As far as the Reverend and the Rejects goes, had about a 50-50 night, but one of those 50s weighed a whole lot more heavy than the other. First of all, in six-man tag team action to open up the show, the Hate Junkies teamed up with the unlikely partner of Todd Sexton to defeat the Texas Tornadoes and Andrew Pendleton III. That was made an impromptu six-man tag on the spot due to some chicanery going on. The Junkies felt like they needed to interject themselves in, and I was very happy to see them on the winning end of things. Big things coming for the Junkies. I think they've been somewhat overlooked in the tag team rankings of Anarchy. They're clearly the crowd favorite in terms of the response, but that's never really mattered to us. But what I'm saying is when you combine that with victories, you got to think somebody got to be getting a title shot around here sometime, a former champion. So look for that to come down the line soon. The Rev's working hard on that for my boys. The other half of the night for us didn't end up so great. Hell of a match, you know, I can say that, though it didn't put any more money in my pocket. The Temptation, Shawn Tempers, defeated the Angel of Death, Azrael, to become the NWA Anarchy Champion and retain the NWA North American Heavyweight Champion Championship under some dubious circumstances. And I take a lot of the blame, honestly, you know. I did what I thought was a good deed. Bo Newsom came out and tried to get involved in the match, and the Rev proved that my stripes haven't changed. As I've been telling everybody, as I cracked the Staff of Righteousness over his spine and broke it, and then I put my boot up his ass all the way up the ramp back to the back to try to get him out of the equation. See, I did not want anything to take away from Azrael getting Shawn one-on-one. What I didn't expect was allegedly, Jeff G. Bailey throwing powder in my eyes. Now, I did not see him with my own eyes. No video footage caught it. A couple of fans said that, and that's apparently the only people that even got a look, and it was mostly a hand coming out of the curtain. Bailey has not made a public statement regarding it, and I'd really hate to think that my buddy with Bailey would do something like that to me, but, you know, I know how he is, and I know what lengths he'll go to achieve success. So if he feels like the Rejects might be stepping in his way or might be in the way of something he wants, then maybe it was. But I'm not ready to point the finger. I just want to see the truth come out because someone threw powder in my eyes, which all that commotion was enough to distract Azrael when he had Tempers right there in the middle, ready to beat him right where he wanted him for that big frog splash elbow, the Passover. He was going to drop it. 1, 2, 3. And, well, we see it didn't happen like that. Temptation took advantage of the distraction, gave Azrael a disgusting neck breaker off the top, which I later saw when we were watching the tape back. Couldn't exactly see it then. I don't know what the hell that powder was. Hope to God it wasn't cocaine because somebody wasted a lot of money if that was the case. But hell, if you're trying to put the Reverend out of commission, you better be wasting a lot of money because it's going to take that. Azrael's, he didn't take it well, but he's coming back, and somebody's going to pay. And you know, one of the Reverend's all-time favorite pastimes is watching motherfuckers pay. So with that in mind, we got a great edition of the show for you tonight. We'll hit the wrestling news right here quickly before we go to the music news. Continuing with the Hardcore Hell coverage, the rest of the results from that card would read, we also saw John Schuyler becoming a new Young Lions champion in a three-way dance over Anthony Henry and Stephen Walters. That was a hell of a match. That's actually out there on YouTube. I posted it on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/midnightblackmass. Need to go like it and get the interactive experience. Seth DeLay defeated Bo Newsom in a very well-contested match, but DeLay turned some of Newsom's chicanery on him. Urban Assault Squad defeated the Ambassadors in a Loser Leaves Town tornado match, with Chris Maine of the Ambassadors taking a losing fall, so he is out of there. From Cornelia, Georgia, in the NWA Anarchy area, Chris Maine is no more. Maine. Tommy Daniels got defeated by Jacob Ashworth, and of course, as I mentioned, Sean Tempers defeated Azrael. And in the main event, in some crazy circumstances, the NWA Elite, Brian Casanova, Seven, Lane Vassar, and Jeff G. Bailey himself in the match, defeated Michael Judas, Brody Chase, Slim J, and Johnny Dangerous in an eight-man tag when the special guest enforcer, former NWA Anarchy owner Jerry Palmer, turned on Team Anarchy, broke his damn axe handle that he calls Big Nasty. I mean, he's a firefighter. He'll carry around an axe to break in the burning apartments or what have you. And so he's got this fucking axe handle. Cracks it. You should have seen the weld it left on Brody Ray Chase. I know he had to take a trip to the hospital. Wouldn't be surprised if he had cracked vertebrae. And the fans were incensed. Things got a little hairy there for the NWA Elite, but they managed to get out of Dodge with the fans really not knowing what the hell to think. Jerry Palmer screaming about Franklin Dove swindling him out of the company and all this stuff about choosing sides. Very strange. But there's your full Hardcore Hell results, since we gave it so much attention. Figured at least let you know what happened, even beyond your favorites, the Devil's Rejects. Upcoming dates tomorrow night, I'll be in Blue Ridge, Georgia for Deep Southern Championship Wrestling at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's at Fannin County High School. I'll be there reuniting with the Strong Style Psycho Tank to take on Cousin Cletus. And the big main event on that show is my former bestest friend, the Temptation, Sean Tempers, taking on Al Snow. So I got to hope the legendary Al Snow sticks it to him one good time, just because he got lucky Saturday night. You got lucky in one match. I don't know if you're going to get so lucky against a veteran of this caliber, Tempers. So you better be watching out for Al Snow tomorrow night. April 14th at NWA Anarchy Television Taping in Cornelia, Georgia. I'll be back there trying to get some retribution. April 20th in NWA Chattanooga. I'll be there with the Deadly Sin 7. To take on Drew Haskins for the NWA Southern Heavyweight title. Also a big six-man tag fan participation strap match with Ace Rockwell, Logan Alvey, and Jessica Blue taking on the Jimmy Rave-approved team of Corey Hollis, Chip Day, and Mike Posey. And then I'll be returning Saturday, April 21st, to Empire Pro Wrestling in Rossville, Georgia. And on to the music news. Biggest of the music news this week, certainly, we regret to inform you of the passing of legendary amplification pioneer Jim Marshall. Well, last name Marshall, amplification, you can probably put it together if you didn't know. The man who founded Marshall Amplifiers, and, you look at every classic concert, all the great magazines of the 70s and 80s, and these great shots, these bands, even when you've seen them live in concert, you see the wall of Marshall stacks. It's two amplifiers, and they do have the rawest, most powerful sound. I've always preferred those when I've played in bands, and our guitar players have been rocking the Marshall stacks. There's just something about that tone. It's why everybody uses them, and, certainly a legend in music and heavy metal. And rock and roll, you gotta wonder how different the landscape of heavy music would be without Jim Marshall. So such an important figure. He died in his late 80s, so he'd been around a while, lived a long, healthy life. Nothing tragic, but unfortunate nonetheless, and tribute must be paid. So Rest in peace, Jim. Rest in peace and blast out. Tell you how you can pay tribute to Jim Marshall on this show. Crank that motherfucker up as loud as it'll go. All right. Moving along, Steel Panther, a band you're going to hear some of later. This is a new boom in hair bands, but not bands from the 80s. You think hair metal, as some, I don't think it's a derogatory term. Some do, but hair metal, glam, whatever you want to call it. A lot of those bands that are still going from the 80s are certainly very popular, but a new band that's gotten very popular is Steel Panther, and they do a total 80s tribute or what have you. It's all original music. They've got quite a following. So they've now been signed to support Ozzy Osbourne and Friends on his big summer tour this year. So add that along the lines of big summer tours continuing for 2012, proved to be the year of the metal. Understand? And unfortunate news to report, a Manchester United Kingdom teenage heavy metal fan was attacked by 15 punk-ass motherfuckers at school, looks like. And they're comparing it to the recent murder of another kid who was attacked for liking metal. Hey, you know, fuck you, motherfucker. Okay, you just got somebody like something different, you go beat them up? Man, those are the guys you want to put in the ring with Seven and Tank and Soapy. You know, who's really tough? Because I know people who are really legitimately tough. And then, you know, you're going to have a 15 kids jumping one young guy. That ain't tough, guys. That ain't tough. So when you find somebody that's tough, hopefully they'll let you know. They named all those people. You can go over to thegauntlet.com and get more details on that. Your news of Behemoth, the awesome Scandinavian death metal, black metalish death metal, very satanic, very awesome. One of the most awesome death metal bands I've ever seen live, actually. They just really have a way of just capturing the audience. Of course, due to their controversial subject matter, they have been banned from an Ohio venue on their upcoming U.S. tour due to the club owner citing religious differences. And you know, it's USA, you know, like I'm all for religious freedom. Like, you know, the people that might be opposed to this show or what have you, they might not be for religious freedom. They might not like what the Rev's doing here, whether it be in part kitsch or be serious. They don't like what we're doing here. I'm open to whatever. You know, I think this is a difficult life. I think, you can't blame somebody for trying to find something to hold on to. But do your research if you're a club owner and you're going to book this tour because you're just bad for business. So apparently they're moving to the La Rosa in Columbus, Ohio, where Dimebag Darrell was shot, unfortunately. But that's still good that they were able to rebook the date, and unfortunate that happened. You know, like I say, I'm all for religious freedom. You know, he should be able to book whoever he wants in his club, but don't book him and then cancel him. Like, you know, it's not a secret. They're a pretty fucking popular death metal band, and you book metal bands, so what's the deal? Jucifer, who's an up-and-coming band you're going to hear some of later, got the chance to see them in Chattanooga several months ago. They're going to be off on a European tour. Megadeth will be performing Peace Sells, But Who's Buying in its entirety at the Download Festival this year. And finally, to round out the music nudes, Lamb of God's Chris Adler will appear on the upcoming Testament album, Dark Roots of the Earth. So some cool tidbits coming out of the rock and metal areas this week. I'm going to play a little Testament for you. Everybody knows, no secret, they're my favorite thrash metal band. Got the chance to see them with Megadeth a couple of years ago in Atlanta. Finally, it's a band I just missed many times, so finally getting to see them was a real treat. Now, this is off of their more recent stuff to show they're still kicking ass also. The Formation of Damnation from 2008. This song's called More Than Meets the Eye. We'll be back with a Moogie Movie Minute. And we're back on another edition of the Midnight Black Mass, and it's time for the Muji Movie Minute. The Rev's best friend for many years, the great Muji Grant, has scoured the compound for the best and the worst in horror cinema. But this week, it's of the best of the Hammer variety, as we've been paying tribute to the legendary British film studio over the last few weeks here on the show. And Muji, we have yet another Ingrid Pitt treasure.
Yes, absolutely. This week we have 1971's Countess Dracula, another Hammer film, just like last week. It stars Ingrid Pitt. Basically, the movie is based off of loosely the legend of Countess Elizabeth Bathory. She was a real person who murdered at least 80 people, but they say upwards of maybe 600 that they couldn't account for back in the late 1500s. She was a countess in Europe, and she famously just a crazy, jealous woman who killed all of the young, good-looking women and bathed in their blood to try to keep herself looking young back in the 1500s, which worked for her because she lived to make it to her 50s when most people died when they were like 30. So there was apparently
something
to it.
And I was about to say, if she killed 96 of them broads, then, you know, obviously either it was working really bad or really shittily. But, you know, you'd think she would have given up after about the fourth or fifth one if it wasn't working. So maybe there's something to that. Not that we're condoning
it. Absolutely. No, we're not condoning it, but it also really breaks the rule that, like, karma's going to get you, at least not in this life, because, like I said, she lived to be, like, 15 years older than most people lived back then, so she got to be evil and keep living. But anyways, the movie is loosely based off her. It's basically that story. It's about this chick who's an old lady at the beginning of the movie. It's a Countess Elizabeth. She's at her husband's just died, and it shows going over her husband's will, and she's really old, and this young kid comes in, and she takes a liking to him, and then she accidentally ends up cutting one of her maids. The blood jumps on her face. She looks in the mirror. Poof, she's young again. So she kind of figures out that the blood of young women are going to help her to look young herself. So basically, the movie, she, her daughter is coming to town, who she hasn't seen since she was 6 years old, and she kidnaps her daughter and continues to constantly use young lady's blood, and she's takes the place of her daughter because she looks so young. And of course, eventually, she tries the trick on a kind of a horse girl. It doesn't work, so she figures out she needs a virgin blood, which eventually leads, of course, she can't find any virgins, so she's going to kill her daughter and use her blood. But, of course, it doesn't work. It goes awry, and she gets found out and put in prison. And I thought it was a pretty cool movie. I didn't like it quite as much as last week's. Like, I still liked it, but I thought it was cool. I didn't think there was, like, a whole lot of scares and stuff in it. It's certainly a Hammer movie, certainly plenty of boobs, including the Ingrid Pitt boobs, which, after a second viewing, some of the best of pre-boob job era in movies, I do believe.
Top shelf. Yes, we've got a great affinity for Ms. Ingrid Pitt. I know if you listen back to our archives, the Robert Everett interview is on here. Is our good friend of the show's. Recommended many guests, and he played with Gigi Allen's band, but he's also just an avid fan of many things, and one of those is horror. And so, you know, if he likes something, he's this guy that's going to go find you and tell you. So he actually got to know Ingrid Pitt and told some cool stories about that. You can go check it out, blogtalkradio.com/PSP. Just look back through the archives. And you will definitely find the Robert Everett interview on the show, and there's some great anecdotes about his, not anecdotes, should I say, but just interesting accounts of his time with Ingrid Pitt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she was great looking. But anyways, like I said, I liked the movie. It wasn't as scary as last week, but it was still cool. Still had the hammer feel. It still was kind of crazy. The fact that it had Dracula calling her Countess Dracula in the title, it's a little misleading. Now part of the Dracula and the vampire legend does go back to Elizabeth Bathory. The fact that, you know, thinking that, like, you know, blood, you know, other people's blood is going to, keep you young, which, if, you know, you watch a lot of vampire movies, they're usually not, it's usually a male vampire, but he's not going after old ladies, it's always young ladies. So it does base a little bit off the legend, but in this case, it seemed more like, you know, the Dracula being the title was probably just because Hammer was so famous for Dracula movies. You know, maybe that's not what they meant, but I would think that if I was, you know, at that time watching the movie, I would have been expecting an actual Dracula, but because it's a Hammer movie, Dracula's going to be in it. But.
Well, yeah, I have a take on that, actually. I think, and I don't know this, I've not done a lot of digging on, you know, the history of how the film was produced or what have you, but I would venture to say at that time it was probably not the norm for a female lead in a movie of any kind, like, you know, for the title to be based around her and everything. So I think that perhaps they thought it more palpable if they presented it as if it were a female counterpart to an already established entity, if that makes sense.
It could very well, and like I said, it's probably just, you know, they're famous for making Dracula movies, they're making this movie's obviously based on Elizabeth Bathory, who has added to the vampire, you know, legend, as a lot of people like. They don't know for sure, but a lot of people think that her bathing in the blood and everything is like something that probably added to over the years whenever people, you know, first just, you know, started thinking about vampires. They think that, you know, was something they took into account and kind of added to the legend. So it's probably just, you know, a smart marketing move, thinking we're known for Dracula movies. You know, Elizabeth Bathory, she's, you know, helped kickstart, you know, wasn't the kickstarter, obviously, but helped with the vampire legend. You know, we're not really lying by calling her a Dracula. So, but I thought it was funny. It was the very end of the movie, because she's, you know, the whole movie you're watching, and there's no vampiring going around or anything. And then at the very end of the movie, after she and her co-conspirators have been found out or locked away in this prison, and this guy rides up with kind of a black hood on his face, and he looks to be, you know, most likely an executioner coming after him. There's a bunch of people that live in the town that are all just standing around that are all of a sudden are acting all crazy outside the prison, like just, you know, chanting different words like horror and stuff like that. And then it gets to the last woman and she's like, Countess Dracula. So that's like the only Dracula reference of the movie. It's the very last line of the movie. They sneak it in. And I thought that was pretty funny. But I like the movie. I gave it 65% well done. Like I said, I didn't find it like very scary, but it was pretty cool. So, and it, you know, it had a lot of good elements. It's not the best Hammer movie ever, but it's good. It's, you know, they got a lot of really good ones. It's probably middle of the pack to me, but it's good.
Yeah, I think that one's extremely representative of Hammer in terms of the style and the feel and the atmosphere. You know, it is not one of the scarier ones. This is more disturbing. But I did enjoy it. I watched it around Halloween time last, so it's pretty fresh in my mind. And, it's a favorite. I enjoy fucked up movies like that. So it was very, very, very enjoyable. And what else is on your mind tonight, Moods? I know you've got a lot. Any other movies you've seen in the horror genre, out of the horror genre, anything you want to talk about?
Well, for horror movies, that's it since last week. I think next week I'm gonna check out Bag of Bones. It was a made for TV movie, but it's based off a Stephen King story, of course. And it's got Pierce Brosnan, the last Bond, is the star of the movie, and a couple of younger actresses are in it. But It's new. It's kind of the newest thing that's coming out on DVD. Like I said, it's going to be about a month, but there should be like tons of horror movies that were in theaters pouring in, new stuff. And I thought that was kind of new, and it's a Stephen King story, so we could check that out. Yeah, outside of horror movie-wise, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff lately. Say the last movie, out-in-theater movie that I saw was The Hunger Games that I was pleasantly surprised with. Like, it was just because, I guess, of the fact that it was, you know, one of those, you know, it's like a young girl teen book is what it's based off
of. It's marketed to the tween demographic.
So you figure it could be Twilight or it could be Harry Potter, you know, but it was kind of somewhere like in between. It was, you know, it was you know, good. Jennifer Lawrence was the star of it. She's awesome. She kind of carried the movie to me, but I was pleasantly surprised because I remember when Twilight came out, I saw it because like it's not vampires. I'll probably like it, even though, you know, it's like, because, you know, I have no problem with like girly movies. As you know,
we know that.
I'm fine with those, you know. But, you know, and I watched Twilight, and I just didn't enjoy it at all. I thought it was, you know, just terrible. So this movie looked like it would be better, and it you know, it was. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I actually saw that, too. You know, my wife is huge into the books now. You know, she's had her new obsession as soon as Harry Potter ended. And she convinced me to watch Harry Potter, you know, many years ago, and I kind of played along. But then as the series drew to an end, I went back, watched them, and I enjoyed them. I don't have room for another geekly obsession in my life. But certainly Harry Potter was pretty cool, I got to say. Queer as that might sound, here, no, if it kills my cred, I don't care, I'll say it, Harry Potter kicks my ass. Especially that last one, man, they was killing motherfuckers left and right, and that Voldemort was a hell of a heel. You know, he was borrowing a lot of stylings from the Emperor, but he was a good heel. But so, yeah, no, I enjoyed the Hunger Games movie, too. I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, well, is this going to be a chick thing, or is... But no, you know, there was some real brutality, you know, some action, a harsh look at life. It was a good flick.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a good action movie. I've heard the books are a bit deeper because just simply from watching the movie, I was like, I didn't really find it, you know, deep or like intellectually, like just simply the movie that I watched wasn't the type of movie that like made me, you know, evaluate the world. You know, it was like, I can see some of the things they're trying to say, but it's not, I didn't think the movie was, you know, really deep in any way, but I've heard that the books are like, you know, there's like a lot more to them and that they're a little bit better, which some of those are, you know, like I said, you can either get Harry Potter or True Blood, another, you know, I love True Blood and it's made for, you know, the books are for, you know, teenage and young women, and it's a great show, so you just never know what you're going to get with one of those, and I like that. Watched a bunch of other stuff, too, man. I saw, what's the movie, 50-50, which is a pretty good movie. It's got some funny stuff in it, but it's more of a drama. It's Seth Rogen and then Jordan, or I just called him Jordan Gordon, Joseph Levitt. It's a movie, he gets cancer, and Seth Rogen's his best friend, and, you know, the movie's based about him, you know, being like a young man in his late 20s. And,
man,
you know, being like, what the hell, but it's good.
Seth Rogen's really conquering the cancer comedy demographic, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. This one was a little bit more serious than the one with Sandler, but it was pretty good. It was a little bit more of a drama, but it had some good funny moments in it as well. I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, man, I've seen a lot of stuff. There's nothing really, I don't think, I think other than, like, the movies that I thought would be cool, other than the Marvel movies, like, overall, like, this calendar, like, last year, which most of the stuff coming on DVD, you know, now was from 2011, was weak overall, like, for horror movies. I mean, there were some decent horror movies, but overall for movies, I thought it was a little bit weak, like, just outside of, like, the big budget movies, like, you know, loved all the Marvel movies, really liked the Fast and Furious movie. You know, it's just a dumb, nonsensical action movie, but it was, you know, it was cool, you know, was fine. Transformers was, you know, seemed like it was written by a child. It was cool. Like, special effects movies were all really good this year, but outside of that, it wasn't really like a classic year, I didn't think.
Well, I don't know. I talked about something. I was going to save this for the comic news, but hell, it would fall under Muji Movie Minute as well. I rented tonight as our Friday night movie here at the house, VOD, the Comic-Con episode 4, The Fan's Last Hope, or whatever the fuck it's called, The Super Size Me Guide, in a documentary on Comic-Con. And,
yeah.
It's fucking badass. It was really good. Like, that the highest recommendation possible if you like cons. This is what I'll say about that, because it really captured it. There was some motherfucking badass cosplayers out there. Like, and I don't really get into, like, I mean, I like the shit out of video games, but I don't geek over them like I do comic books. So, you know, I play whatever's out there. But, like, these Mass Effect, you know, is a very popular game. And they had these guys cosplaying. Like, one of these dudes had his alien head. It was like Jim Henson animatronic style. This chick just made it in her garage. You know, he, like, followed, like, an aspiring comic artist and a writer and, like, the chick doing cosplay. And she ended up getting a job, like, on the Mass Effect movie from just the cosplay at Comic-Con and this documentary. So that was pretty cool. You definitely need to check it out. It's highest recommendation possible.
Yeah, it's cool. I was thinking about renting that tonight, but then had other stuff. I was watching a little UFC Ultimate Fighter, so I was waiting on it, but I definitely thought about renting that earlier, and I was thinking about, you know. So, yeah, that'll certainly get watched. I do like the Morgan Spurlock documentaries. Super Size Me was a very entertaining film, which did the exact opposite effect. Made me go immediately to McDonald's after watching him gain a bunch of weight, but yeah, that does look pretty cool. It's been pumped, you know, all over G4 and everything. They've been showing all the previews, so it'll certainly get watched.
Yeah, it was top notch. So, killer, man. Well, you know, you mentioned that last week. I will say next week is Friday the 13th, and of course we have the NWA Chattanooga Extravaganza on the 20th, so there will not be a show broadcasting that week. So do we want to do, did we cover Friday the 13th adequately in the last Friday the 13th show we did sometime last year, or do you want to try to do it again?
Yeah, we can always do that. We can of course push the bag of bones, since it's obvious. Yeah, it didn't even hit me that it's Friday the 13th. Yeah, we can do that, man. I mean, we could, I think certainly a good idea is we could give a little, you know, just kind of a little retrospective on the whole deal, but I think something interesting to do, simply because I've thought this, but I haven't gone back and kind of watched them. We need to go watch the original Friday the 13th, which, you know, of course, didn't have Jason, but still was, you know, a great movie, or a great horror movie. You know, we need to check that, and then also watch the remake, and truly determine if the remake was the best Friday the 13th movie ever. Because coming out of the theater, watching that remake, I've thought about it since then, and thought, well, maybe it was just, you know, living in the moment, because, you know, people are, you know, it is really easy to get lost in the now and, you know, forget about, you know, things and overhype things just because they're new to you. But coming out of that theater, man, I thought that was the best Friday the 13th movie I'd ever seen. So it'll be interesting to see if that holds up after, you know, with it not being so new.
Yeah, I caught a bag of shit by some of my friends for liking that, but I thought it was fucking killer, that new Friday the 13th remake that they did. So, you know, I would let you want to scrap then Bag of Bones and push that till when we return at the end of the month.
We can push that for the 2 weeks from now and just do the Friday, or for the, yeah, after we return after the NWA show, and just do Friday the 13th next week.
Okay, magnificent. Then we will be celebrating Friday the 13th with a true comparison between the original and the remake of what was the better Friday the 13th. Will our results shock you? You'll have to tune in to find out next Friday night here on the Midnight Black Mass. Muji, thank you as always, my brother. It's been an extended edition of the Muji Movie Minute. We will see you next week, man.
See ya.
Adios. We're not done just yet, folks. We've got more of the show still to go. Gonna kick you with a little more awesome heavy fucking metal. Some Pantera coming up right now, a little rarity off of the Crow motion picture soundtrack. This song is called The Bads. We'll be back with TV Casualty right after this.
Stuck on this.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Tempe's of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling. And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Twitter at Dragons Rejects. That's Dragon, as in Dan the Dragon Wilson. S, as in the possessive with no apostrophe. Rejects, as in the Devil's Rejects, at Dragons Rejects on Twitter. You can hear my rants and have me annoy you with lots of plugs for my upcoming dates and shows and bitching about comic books and what have you. But feel free to hit me up on there. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. If you have any questions for the show or want to call in, feel free. Phone number is 213-325-3434. We're going to be on the air here for probably about another 15 to 20 minutes, I'd say, on this edition maximum. Got TV Casualty coming up right here for you. And then also later on, of course, we'll play some more tunes and come back with some comic book news to round out the show as we have been doing. And, of course, we've announced next week, Friday night, we're going to do the Friday the 13th comparison, the original versus the remake, which is truly the better horror film. Will our results surprise you? We're going to look at it with a fine-tooth comb and try to find out with me and the Muji. And me and Muji might even have different opinions. You know, that happens from time to time and makes for some lively discussion here on the Midnight Black Mass. But it's now time. Take a trip into the DC animated universe for another edition of TV Casualty. And we're moving right through Batman, the animated series of the Fox Network classic that aired in the early 90s. Going to move along once we finish that. We've got a long way to go. We're still in season one, the four seasons total, but still trucking right through it. And then after that will be Superman, the animated series, and then Justice League. And if we're still on the air after that, God knows. But Green Lantern and what have you, we can get to it all. Ain't going to hurt my feelings to watch that great animated glory again. We might even switch gears to Marvel and take a look at some of the 90s cartoons, Spider-Man, X-Men, or even the current Wolverine and the X-Men that they did a few years ago, and the current Avengers cartoon. All great stuff, but of course, what we're looking at now is the man known as Bruce Wayne, the billionaire playboy who masquerades during the day under the guise of that billionaire playboy, but at night reveals his true colors as the Batman seeking vengeance against crime in Gotham City. And in this episode, we see another appearance of the Penguin, and he is attempting to steal a Fabergé egg, and Batman, of course, thwarts this and ends up eating a gas pellet. There's two kids from the suburbs that he ends up running into after eating the gas pellet and getting the hell out of Dodge. Basically, they end up hiding him in their basement, and Batman's out of it. They've got to get him the antidote. Of course, the Penguin eventually finds him, tracks him there, and he's gonna kill the Batman. It gets pretty graphic, you know. He busts out the umbrella with a big knife on the end, and he's gonna slit Batman's throat. And just then, the antidote kicks in, and Batman whips his ass. And the kids, of course, they did their part in saving the day, and they keep Batman's secret. Of course, Batman talks to their mom, lets them know what great kids they were because they were going to be in trouble for helping him. And so Batman gets them over with mom, and Penguin goes to jail. So, you know, it's a very fun episode. Not a lot of depth to it, but you didn't get a lot of the Batman. A lot of it was from the eyes of the kids, and that brought a fun perspective for one episode for something different. So I definitely enjoyed it. Another classic of the Batman animated series, and on we go. We'll be back next week with another edition of TV Casualty, and so many more Batman episodes to go, folks. But going to play some more tunes for you right here. We've got the man himself, Alice Cooper, going to go see him this summer. With Iron Maiden on a mega tour in June. Just a couple of months away from that. I'm super stoked. That's going to be in Atlanta at the, it's Aaron's. I think I misstated it last week as the Hi-Fi Vibes has changed again over the last few years. It's now Aaron's Amphitheater, the former Lakewood Amphitheater in Atlanta. Alice Cooper and Iron Maiden looking up to get the dates because I'm a little fuzzy on it. I know it's like the third Saturday or the second or maybe the fourth Saturday in June. Somewhere in there, red's a little foggy, it's getting late. But here is off of the classic Welcome to My Nightmare album, Cold Ethel. It's a love song.
I
issues. Avengers vs. X-Men is underway. Issues number 0 and number 1 have sold out in their first printing. The big summer event for Marvel Comics has kicked off and in a big way. I'm not going to give any spoilers for you. You need to get your ass out there and get your copy. They've sold out on the newsstand, so you can find a comic retailer that might have a few copies left. You probably have to go online where there's plenty of comic shops that will hook you up still at a fair price. You can get them pretty close to market yet. Or if you want to wait till the collected edition comes out, Marvel's very good about getting those out quickly. But it's an epic battle, and we're told major implications for the future of the Marvel Universe, unlike anything that has been done. So let's see if it's going to live up to the hype. So far, I'm loving it. Eisner Awards have been announced as far as nominees. Looks like the big hitters are going to be Jeff Lemire and Mark Waid. Jeff Lemire, who writes Animal Man for DC and his own title, Sweet Tooth. Mark Waid, who writes Daredevil, among other titles. They seem to be guys that are looking to pick up the big awards. Not decided yet. Those are the nominees. You can go to comicbookresources.com for a full list of the nominees of this year's Eisner Awards. But those do seem to be the two favorites for coming home with lots of gold as we translate it to the wrestling world. Speaking of Animal Man, looks like his first cartoon short is scheduled to debut on DC Nation this Saturday. And they've stated here and there that some of these shorts are just that, but some of them might be looked at for, you know, future full-length cartoons. So if Animal Man is good, that would be a hell of a cartoon to do. Though I don't know, it's probably going to be a more wacky styling than the darker style they go with in the comic. But still, I think there's such an obscure character. Have to be happy to see it animated. It made it on an edition of The Brave and the Bold previously, but still keeping him alive. DC is bent on pushing Animal Man, and I don't think it's a bad idea because the comic is of the best things they're doing right now. Captain America 2 has been inked, signed, sealed, and delivered. Coming out summer of 2014. No director has been named, but actually the guys who do Community, the television show on NBC, are in the running for being named director of that film. Please, 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 if anybody of importance is listening to me and can get this out, please, please, please do the Winter Soldier storyline in Captain America 2. That's quite possibly the greatest thing that's been told in Marvel in a long time. It certainly tugged at my heartstrings and was badass all in the same respect. So if you're doing Captain America 2, it's only fitting that the Winter Soldier is the villain. And then, of course, I was going to talk about Comic-Con Episode 4, but I'll just say again what I stated in the Muji Movie Minute and reiterate that it was fantastic. If you're a fan of conventions, then it gets the highest recommendation possible. Tons of great interviews, tons of great footage. Everyday Joe's spliced in with very famous people, so get all kinds of different perspectives and a lot of comic book insiders. Very, very cool. Okay, fans, well, that wraps up another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. We thank you for joining us here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/PSP. Again, go like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MidnightBlackMass. Follow me on Twitter, @DragonsRejects. And we're going to end the show with a band we talked about. This song's called Black Powder. And this is Juicer for bringing it to you. And I'm the Reverend telling you to keep one foot in the gutter and one fist in the gold. I'm out.
It will be easier if you don't resist, and less dangerous.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.